plants research part of this session. It's sort of a weird hybrid session, but that's okay. And I'm your next speaker. I'm Lynn Geddes from the University of Florida, and I will be talking about evaluating herbicides and combinations for management of the submersed weeds Hygrophila, fanwort, and crested floating heart. And this was done with basically everybody in my lab. These three guys listed with me are all undergrads, and they all work for me as well. So first I want to introduce you to our target weeds. The first of these is Hygrophila. This is Hygrophila polysperma. It's an East Indian native. It was first introduced to the United States in the 1940s, where it was sold as Oriental Ludwigia in the aquarium industry because this was sold as an oxygenator for fish tanks. It quickly escaped cultivation. It was found in Florida's waters in 1965, but was misidentified for a number of years, is correctly identified in 1977. This has become one of our most invasive aquatic weeds in Florida. It's also a federally listed noxious weed, so not only is it a bad problem for us, it is a bad problem everywhere that it invades natural waters. It really likes systems that have some level of flow, so we don't typically see Hygrophila in still systems like ponds or lakes or that sort of thing. It's much more common in canals and systems like that. Our next weed is fanwort, Cabomba caroliniana, and ironically, this is actually a native plant, so technically we can't really call it invasive. However, the aquarium industry has... they haven't done breeding, but they have done selections of this plant, and they identified a species that had all of those characteristics that make it a good plant to cultivate, grows really fast with low input. That also makes it a very good competitor in natural systems. So that aquarium selection has now escaped into our natural waters, which is bad in and of itself. It has also hybridized with our wild type and created a super fanwort that is resistant to virtually every type of herbicide. That happened around the 2000s. And this invasive biotype in and of itself is bad. It's more herbicide resistant or tolerant than the wild type. And again, it has hybridized with the wild type. In contrast to the Hygrophila, this tends to like more quiescent or slow-moving waters. So we do see it in systems with some level of flow, but usually not in systems where there's a lot of energy because it's a fairly fragile plant. Our next weed is crested floating heart. This is Nymphoides cristata. It's a beautiful plant, right? This is another Asian native, and it was introduced through the water garden industry as an ornamental. It is truly a beautiful plant. You can see why you would want this in a water garden. It was first found in Florida's waters in the mid-90s in Collier County. It has since invaded a number of our aquatic systems in the state, and it's highly productive. So wherever it has been found, it's become very invasive very quickly. It's also been found in South Carolina, a number of other states as well, but in South Carolina it is causing huge problems, particularly in the Santee Cooper Reservoir, which depends on clear water, clean water, unclogged water for hydropower generation, among other things. And so this has invaded that system, and it's hybridized with a native close relative of this, Nymphoides aquatica. This is now listed as a noxious weed in Florida, and that's a fairly new listing. So it was in about, I think, 2015 or thereabouts. It was added to the state's noxious weed list. So it is no longer legal to cultivate this plant in the state. Up until then, it was widely grown in water gardens and by the aquarium industry. Like the fanwort, it prefers quiescent or slow-moving water. It's because it is a floating-leaved plant. It's rooted in the substrate, but it does have long petioles that support the leaves, which float on the surface of the water. And so it doesn't like lots and lots of flow because those petioles can be fairly fragile. As far as current management methods for these three species, the focus of this is herbicides, so I'm not going to talk about any mechanical or cultural control methods. But Dr. Enlow at University of Florida just did a new EDIS publication, which is our extension document system, on the efficacy of labeled herbicides for control of aquatic weeds. And so for these three species, he lists Hygrophila is having some decent efficacy from flumioxazin, which is a contact herbicide. Aquathol provides fair control. There are no systemic products that work. For fanwort, there are a few other options. They include flumioxazin, again, with good levels of control, a few with fair levels of control, and then the systemic product, fluridone. And for crested floating heart, sort of a similar situation, although we do have a couple products that provide excellent control of crested floating heart. So our goal was to fill in those gaps because there are gaps in that system. We don't have any information in that EDIS document about the effects of penoxalam on fanwort or crested floating heart. This is a fairly new herbicide that hasn't really been explored very well. Bispirovac, which is another ALS inhibitor, acetylactate synthase inhibitor, we don't know how it affects fanwort or crested floating heart. Ditto for amazamox, we don't have information on how it affects fanwort. Tepramazone, no idea what it does to those two species. And then that new herbicide, that's sort of an inside joke in the aquatic world. We recently had a new active ingredient labeled, and it's really unusual. It's an auxin mimic. It's flupyroxifen, and its trade name is Procellacor, and it just received its federal label at the beginning of this year, and it received a state label for aquatic use just a few months ago. So we know virtually nothing about how Procellacor affects these species. So our goal in this research was to fill in some of the gaps in that table and just add to the body of information for aquatic weed control in Florida. So to accomplish this, we did some herbicide trials in mesocosms at the Fort Lauderdale Research and Education Center. And I'm trying to moderate myself, so I got to check the time from time to time. Okay, talk faster. So these mesocosm studies, I'll show you pictures of how these are set up. And I don't expect you to read this entire table, but what I want to point out is we've got a number of systemic treatments. Those are the first four rows here. We have auxins, we have ALS inhibitors, HPPD inhibitors, and PDS inhibitors. If a product has a star next to it, it was tested alone and in a mix with 370 parts per billion of diquat, which is a standard combination in the aquatic world. If it has a carrot, we also tried it in conjunction with 100 parts per billion of flumioxazin, which is Clipper, which is a new product we've had for less than 10 years in the aquatic world, and it's proving to be a pretty decent tank partner. So those are the treatments that we tried. These were all applied as single water column treatments to static systems. So this is what one of our mesocosms looked like. The mesocosms are actually 68-liter tubs. They're lined with heavy plastic bags and filled with water. We did four replicates of each treatment in a completely randomized design. So this is about what that looked like. We did those initial treatments, and then we monitored these for 16 weeks after treatment. And at the end of that 16-week period, we did visual ratings just for quality, and then we did destructive harvests to evaluate dry mass and biomass production over that 16-week period. Now here come the big ugly graphs. The first of these is for Hygrophila. It's like, oh my God, that's a lot of information, right? But I don't expect you to look at a lot of that information. On the right side, we've got dry weight data. On the left side, we have our visual quality data. The important thing to note on these is that in 32 out of our 35 treatments, and we're not counting our untreated control treatments, these are herbicide treatments, 32 out of those 35 treatments reduced biomass by at least 90% compared to the untreated controls. That bar up at the top, right here, that's the untreated control mean, and then the 90% reduction bar is down here. So anything below that bar had a 90% or greater reduction in dry biomass compared to the untreated controls. Only 15 of those 35 treatments reduced visual quality by more than 90%. So that was sort of our benchmark, and that's what we used with our final evaluations. The visual quality was a much better marker of how these herbicides were working on these plants. For fanwort, we have a very similar setup, but we found many fewer treatments that were decent at reducing biomass. and visual quality in this species. So only 11 of those 35 reduced dry weight by 90%, only 8 reduced visual quality by 90%. On crested floating heart, 23 of those treatments reduced biomass, and 18 of them reduced visual quality. So what does all of that mean? That's an excellent question. We found that these treatments had a greater impact on dry weight than on visual quality, and we think that is probably because some of these plants actually started to outgrow those treatments after a certain length of time. So they may have been knocked back initially, which would explain the reduction in biomass, and then once they started regrowing, the new plant material that was produced, the regrowth, looked really good. There just wasn't that much of it because the plants were growing out of the herbicide treatment. And so to recap what we found, on Hygrophila, we had 15 of those 35 reduced visual quality by 90%. On Fanwort, it was 8 of those treatments, and on Floating Heart, it was 18. So let's say we have a canal with all three of these species in the same system. And that does happen. It's not super, super common, but weird things happen in South Florida, so it's definitely possible. If we wanted a silver bullet that would kill all three of these species at one time, we found that 6 of those 35 treatments would do that. They would reduce biomass and visual quality by 90% in all of these species. Those were all systemic treatments. We found that there were 3 single product treatments and 3 involved mixes with that 370 parts per billion of diquat. So for our single product treatments, we got good control with 2.5 parts per million of triclopyr and 10 or 20 parts per billion of procellacor. That's that new auxin mimic that we don't know much about. And then in the mixes with diquat, we had triclopyr mixed with diquat, 150 parts per billion of pinoxalam with diquat, and then 45 parts per billion of floridone with diquat. So, and for those of you who actually work with aquatic weeds, 45 parts per billion of floridone is high. It's still well below label, but it's pretty high. You lose selectivity at this rate. So that's all good and well. We've got a silver bullet, but a very important thing to remember, particularly in my world with aquatics, these experiments were conducted in systems with no flow. So we put the treatment out, it stayed there. That doesn't usually happen in our world because you put the treatment out, you've got flow in a system, it flushes the treatment out of the system. We also had no dilution. These were captive systems and they were static treatments. So we put in an exact amount of material and it stayed at that exact concentration except for normal half-life degradation and that sort of thing. That doesn't happen out in the real world as well. So as a result, this is a great starting point, but more research is definitely needed, especially for field trials. And this research was sponsored by the South Florida Water Management District, which is the biggest water management district in Florida. They control the lion's share of the land and the funding. So this is a project near and dear to their heart. They're responsible for keeping water flow canals open. And this research was done in my lab, at the Aquatic and Wetland Plant Science Lab, down at the Fort Lauderdale Research and Education Center, and I am officially out of time. So I'll be around if you have questions. I'll be happy to answer them on the break.